Boy, are we having a discussion. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable panel this morning. We are thrilled to have our dear friend Stu Shinsky, who is here, executive editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal in Poughkeepsie, New York. Thank you very much for being with us, sir.
Thank you. Always fun to come up the thruway.
Good to have you here. Also, WAMC's Alan Chartok, and of course, University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good.
Excellent. So let's talk about the Ukraine, and we obviously talked about this yesterday, but more unrest. Ukraine's descent into a spiral of violence accelerated on Thursday as protesters and riot police and officers used firearms in a clash as opposition members sought to reclaim areas of Independence Square, the symbolic central plaza in the capital, that had been taken by the police 2 days before. And I was watching footage just about 10, 15 minutes ago, live footage, which is really a very violent, incredibly tense situation that continues at this hour.
Mm-hmm. I got a lot of homework, really, from listeners yesterday. They sent me articles to read that had a different point of view of mine, and the point of view was that this is being consciously stirred and orchestrated by the West. And
A point I hate to say that I made yesterday.
I know, that's why they made it. They actually said, you know, Alan may be right, surprisingly enough. Alan may be right.
Why is it that everybody sends the shot
good
my
morning,
way?
I know, it's true. You're just such a target. With that in mind, I did read it and said, okay, I'll keep an open mind, and I read the pieces, and then, you know, you look at the news that Joe mentioned, and this is not just a Kiev demonstration. It's going on really across this huge country. There are governors' houses and municipal buildings are being taken over in Kiev itself, around Independence Square, the huge, massive place in the middle of Kiev, just there this summer, and it's an amazing sight. So I'm trying to imagine it like Tahrir Square, filled with people and encampments. And they reporters yesterday were finding citizens going down to the square with shopping carts filled with homemade bombs and also with supplies and food. And
right.
If the CIA started this, they've gotten awfully good lately at their job. I don't remember them being this effective in other places. Or if they started it, it's caught on with the people, because there is a real, as I have been arguing, desire for, come on, a government that really is democratic and represents us.
I started listening to the BBC this morning at 2:30, and again and again and again, and Rosemary, I really wanted to pick your brain on this because you really do understand it so well. And they make the point that the country is divided into the East and the West, and that the, you know, East are pro, you know, Russian, and that the and that the West is pro EU. And I think what's interesting here is, doesn't necessarily mean that it's the CIA that is doing this. It could well be agents for the EU, which really got screwed when the president turned around and didn't keep his word and sign the agreement with the EU. And then I worry about Putin, because, you know, Putin is such an animal that that I am sure he's on the phone saying, "Niet, you know, kill them, use bullets, do what you have to do," because it's what he would do there. And, you know, I just think that it's complicated, it's messy, and we don't really know the whole story.
Yeah. Rachel Maddow, if you can tolerate her obviously very liberal bent, has actually done quite good contextual information about this background. And she points out this really goes back to Stalin's time when...
Stalin.
Exactly. And, you know, the Russians, the Soviets... put into Ukraine people who were native Russians.
Right, no question.
And so they changed really the population, and they killed Ukrainians, and there definitely is a divide. You go into Ukraine, and you'll see in Kiev it's all Ukrainian spoke. I honestly have no gift for languages, and I can't tell the difference. But when you travel
between Russian and Ukrainian,
but there is a switch, so I'm traveling with a guy who knows both languages, and he switches from one to the other, and you go into the Crimea, and it's all Russian and very pro-Russian. So there's a pull in that direction, perhaps artificially made, but those people now have lived there for 40 years. There is a divide in the country between the East and the West.
And then, you know, the Russians and Stalin did this in his own. I made that up, and did his own. It made his own. They did this with a lot of the Soviet bloc countries.
It was a way to neutralize the Muslim and indigenous people.
Well, also to just control.
Yeah, you know, control, happened. Exactly. Sure. Yeah. Exactly. And Putin is definitely in the Soviet model again.
Well, he was a KGB guy, as we all know, mentioned many times.
It's just the continuing rolling of the fight for democracy, you know, Arab Spring, now this. And I'm sure Mr. Putin is just a little upset this is happening during the nice Sochi Olympics as well. Gee, are they trying to steal the spotlight there? But you know what? It's a tragic situation. The footage is just absolutely horrid to look at this for what's going on over there.
So again, I'll go back. If it was the CIA or agents for the EU, which the EU seems even more inept to me than the CIA, then they have tapped into something that's deep within the Ukrainian society.
I think that's right.
You had mentioned Rachel Maddow, but there is she did a great monologue on it for a long. That's what I love about that show. It goes for a very long time. But she put it on her Facebook and page, and also tweeted it. So if you get a chance to look at it,
that's really good. She has a definite point of view. You'll have no trouble telling what it is. But her background and her contextual stuff is really excellent, and it's missing from a lot of the short print pieces that you see in the newspaper.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk about continue with this issue and talk about other issues as well. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And you can tweet us and Facebook us and webpage us and do all that other stuff as well. Roundtable WAMC next on the Roundtable.
Support comes from Adams Ferriker Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger. Fresh seafood, Hereford beef, farm fresh produce, local and imported cheeses, specialty groceries. AdamsFarms.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. 518-580-8080. And Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York, plastic surgeon practicing cosmetic surgery in the Capital District since 1996, introducing TrueSculpt non-invasive body contouring. A surgeon's hands, a woman's touch. CAPEKplasticsurgery.com.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion, and we welcome your comments as always. WAMC.org is the webpage, roundtable at WAMC.org if you would like to email us. I just want to quickly look at the op-ed page of the New York Times, where they say Ukraine is in the middle of a violent political crisis. Dozens of people died this week and hundreds more were injured as protesters fought police in the capital. What began in November as a series of peaceful protests in favor of closer ties with the European Union and a greater autonomy from the influence of Russia has escalated. To save Ukraine, the government and opposition alike must take the difficult but necessary choice to compromise and reconcile. European leaders should immediately schedule direct talks with Vladimir Putin of Russia and his top officials to find a temporary solution to stop the bloodshed and a longer-term plan that would allow Ukrainians to determine their political destiny in a peaceful and democratic fashion. But the West must make clear to Moscow that Ukraine, a bridge between East and West, should not be the object of geopolitical games. And the op-ed is entitled How Ukraine Can Be Saved. Easier said than done?
Absolutely easier said than done. I mean, look, why would Putin listen to that advice? I mean, if you have democracy there, he's out. And so he's not going to say, yes, this is more important than the chaos, because he doesn't care about the chaos. He wants to win. Mm-hmm. And he wants to reestablish Russia, you know, and its primacy in that area when they lost everything, back on the world stage again. So I'm not saying, you know, this is a good thing, it's a terrible thing, but it's clear that, you know, this is advice coming from the New York Times that is going to fall on deaf ears.
It's all nice and reasonable and about as anemic as the response of the U.S. government. I mean, this is a man who was content to burn Chechnya to the ground and rebuild it in his model. So I can't imagine that deaths in Ukraine are going to move him.
Mm-hmm. Let us move on to other issues this morning. We will talk about a report from, I apologize because I was
The technology fails you again.
You know, we have to pay up on the Washington Post subscription.
Well, don't look at me.
I'm just saying. I had the article, but now it's not letting me in.
You have exceeded your limit of free articles
which
for
I
the
thought,
month. Eh?
You know, how long have we been doing this? Anyway, okay. So a U.S. drone strike. Oh. See, what they do is they tease you for like 4 seconds, and you think you have it, and then you don't.
Yeah. By the way, I just want to say, for the record, I need you to pay whatever you need to do to get this newspaper and any other newspaper you want, Joe.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, didn't you have a fund drive that pays for subscriptions?
Just,
yeah, I remember that.
Pennies a day. I know. We have to keep our newspapers in business. U.S. military drone strike in Yemen last December may have killed up to a dozen civilians on their way to a wedding and injured others, including the bride, a human rights group says. U.S. officials say only members of Al-Qaeda were killed, but they have refused to make public the deaths of two U.S. investigators into the incident. Human Rights Watch released a report on the drone strike Thursday, citing interviews with 8 witnesses and relatives of the dead, as well as Yemeni officials. The report said that 4 Hellfire missiles were fired at a wedding procession of 11 vehicles on December 12th. Killing at least 12 men and wounding at least 15 others, 6 of them seriously. The report said that the procession may have included members of Al-Qaeda thought to be in the Arabian Peninsula.
Wait, are you saying the American government wasn't fully forthright about an attack that may have killed civilians?
According to Human Rights Watch, that is what I'm saying.
If I had to balance the credibility of the U.S. military against Human Rights Watch, I would pick the Human Rights Group. They were on the ground. They talked to the people involved. The evidence, and they admit themselves that they have no real knowledge of whether any of those killed wedding party members or guests had anything to do with Al-Qaeda. There's no way to know that. But what they can say is that on the kill list are none of the people that the U.S. government says they were targeting.
Right. Yeah.
So Nick Turse was in town yesterday. I know you had him on the show,
yes.
Joe. And he's a kid, really. He was born at 75 when the war in Vietnam was over.
Man.
He is an amazing researcher. And he has spent 12 years now looking into U.S. war crimes that were investigated and never acted upon in Vietnam. And in a speech at UAlbany yesterday, he and students talked about how that continues. And he mentioned the drone strike in Yemen. This is the exact same thing. There were civilian casualties. And we just hide them in, you know, it's happens in war, you know, we made a little mistake.
It's part of the
and we're not
accountable.
It's part
of the business, yes.
Yeah.
And then what goes from there, and you don't take it the step further to A, investigate, and B, to have any charges,
right,
or any measure beyond that.
I like, if you read this article that on the Post, if you have a subscription to the Washington Post,
right,
you'll see that
the
Yemen government took the step of kind of trying to make up to the relatives for this horrible accident, and sent food and money and Kalashnikov rifles to relatives. And it seems to me that even some tribal little token like that from the U.S. government might be nice.
It just gets so scary that, you know, we hear this time and time and time and time again where the full story didn't come out, or the story came out that was a half truth, or the sin of omission, and people wonder, gee, why don't people vote? Why are people so apathetic? This is why. They can't get a straight answer.
So what is the rationale of because I want to get back to your point, Rosemary, of you know, this is the way we do it. This is the way we've done it. So there's
another side to this, obviously. I tend to subscribe to what Rosemary.
Is that a grumble?
Oh, okay. No, it's like, God, here we come. We're safe. We have to keep the world safe.
No, I didn't say that. I happen to be with you when it comes to, you know, what we're doing. But on the other hand, the other argument is always, well, a bunch of, you know, bums brought down the thugs brought down the World Trade Center. We found ourselves at war, and there are choices to be made. So, for example, do we send in drones which are going to do what they call collateral damage, or do we put, you know, to go into Afghanistan for another 10 years or wherever we're going and put American lives on the ground? That's their argument. Mm-hmm. That is their argument. Yep. And it goes further, which is, okay, they're saying what happens is that these guys are shameless about surrounding themselves with the bad, with kids. And with wives and husbands, and doing that, they don't have to do
human
that.
Human shields is what
that's you're right, but they don't have to do that. I think it's always good to get at least both sides on the table. That's all.
I can't completely disagree. Oddly enough, there is a midpoint in this too. And if one of the targets of the drone attack had been in that wedding party, and there were 8 deaths, and this guy, I'd say, okay, you got a point. But the U.S. government has not shown that there was anybody in that party that they were targeting. It seems to be an out-and-out mistake.
Well, it probably is. And probably the question is, where does the information come from? So in other words, obviously, they have spies, you know, over there. They have people who will tell that this cavalcade, or whatever you're going to call it, is this motorcade has Al-Qaeda people in it. And that rings the bell.
Or a wedding procession, right?
Yeah, or the funeral procession.
I think the media plays a role in this, too. We have, like, given, since the Iraq War began, what is that, 2002, we have given this impression that the American military is so technologically advanced that we can have clean kills. We can blow up buildings without hurting anybody next door. We can pinpoint our targets and send in a drone who will take them out, and that's it. The Israelis have the same sort of image, and it simply is not true.
Well, I don't know that I've
seen that not true.
Surprisingly, Rosemary, I don't know if I agree with you. And that is that I think we've all been exposed to the Pakistani examples and to the others where, you know, we've lost tremendous amounts of public opinion in each of these countries. And it's said by the media over and over again that they object to the fact that these have been terrible strikes which have hurt families and children.
But your point has to do with the technology, right?
I think we still have. And the way we cover war is just, I think, really changed. You know, you have one or two American soldiers who are missing, say, on the border of Iraq or Iran. Afghanistan. And we the media goes into a frenzy trying to find them, telling their whole life story, talking to their parents. And where's the idea that when you go into the military, you're putting your life on the line? That's what the troops are supposed to do. And yet, please let me finish, and then you can zap me. But compared to that we watch and protect each American troop, thousands, millions of civilians have died. We don't even know the number. Tell me how many civilians died in Vietnam, or in Afghanistan, or in Iraq.
Well, that's just, they're not going to tell you because it doesn't suit their need. I mean, some of these weapons, I'm sure they're very able to target precisely. And they know who's going down when these things strike. They just don't want to tell you that, by the way, a father of three or whatever, or a bridal party. They just don't want to tell you that.
I want to put a pause in the conversation. We will continue. We are going to go to a news break, and we will be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. I am delighted to reintroduce our panel. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here.
Hey.
We had a photo op during the break.
Alan's playing with Instagram.
Alan is Instagramming a photo of the partial panel. Because, Alan, you didn't do a selfie. You didn't put yourself.
Well, I didn't because I'm so thin now that I wouldn't show up anyway. No points.
Right. Yes. Okay. So, Alan's here, and Rosemary Romeo and Stu Shinsky, and we welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Now, Alan, I just want to quickly go back to you because we were talking about the drone operations, and Rosemary had said her piece, and then I know you wanted to say something about that. Do you remember what that was, or do you?
Certainly not.
Okay, all right.
Excellent. So my strategy set. I now just keep talking.
So let me just say this before we end on drones, and then we'll go over to other news.
Oh, yeah, I remember what I want to say.
Okay.
Our veterans and our soldiers are very important people, and I don't think for a second that Rosemary was wrong, that we don't do justice in terms of how many other people are collateral in this, but I do think, you know, that every one of, and the Israelis know it too, and they'll do anything they can to get any one of their soldiers back, including trading hundreds of people, you know, for them. So I just want to make sure that I check in and say, you know, I understand when somebody disappears, one of our people disappears, we want to do anything we can to get them back.
I just want to look at the drone program overall in this article. It says the continued secrecy surrounding the drone program shows how the Obama administration has been slow to transfer the CIA drones over to the military's Joint Special Operations Command nearly a year after the president promised in a May 2013 speech to put the military largely in charge of lethal strikes and thereby make the program more transparent. Congress has objected to the transfer to the military because the CIA can strike in countries where the military cannot, for instance, in countries that refuse to allow U.S. counter-terrorist actions on its soil. With the drone program in limbo, U.S. officials have simply continued to say nothing of the strikes wherever they occur.
Does that make you feel safe?
No, I don't feel safe at all, and I don't trivialize this at all. I think it's a terrible situation that we live in a world where this kind of stuff goes on. But on the other hand, I truly believe that there are choices to be made in all of this. And, you know, one of the choices is that you go after the bad guys. Would I prefer that they did it in such a way that they didn't make mistakes? Yes.
Well, in the case of the wedding party, the report shows that it was not actually in compliance with U.S. requirements, the president's requirements.
Bad, you know.
Yes, and so who's the guy in the military who's been indicted for violating the rules? I don't see any court martials. We're not going after the bad guys. Some of the bad guys are our own.
With that, we'll take a pause and change the subject and move on to other issues. We're kind of cleaning up from the last half hour, and then we'll move
go
on
to
now.
Next.
Yeah, now into the next. And traditionally, where I would and I will ask our guest what is making news in the pages of their newspaper, and that newspaper in question today is the Poughkeepsie Journal and Stu Shinsky.
Well, we have a lot going on. Today's paper. You like beer?
Yes.
He does. I don't like it.
Well, I don't know if it falls on the Weight Watchers, Alan.
No.
Beer may not qualify for your...
5 points.
Is that what it is?
5 points.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you still waste any of your points?
No. No, I don't usually waste my points. Mm-hmm.
Well, stay out of Dutchess County, because our front page story is talking about the rise of craft beer breweries.
Yeah.
We've Dutchess done that
County.
A lot around here, right?
Several
here,
of them.
Well, I think we're doing it, and they've got a group or a meeting coming up. Am I making this up? Is it, maybe this has nothing to do with what you're dealing
I'm
with.
I'm sure you're not, but it's not really what we're...
Okay, go ahead. All right. So, what are you all working on?
One of our reader favorite topics is food and drink.
Yes.
And we do a lot of trend stories. And one of the things that we've noticed is these brew pubs and these craft brew manufacturers are popping up. There's like six that have opened up in the last 2 years, and it's a major change in the sort of small business approach in Dutchess County. That's an interesting story. We have a very compelling story coming this Sunday. We did an investigation that has shown that the rate of suicide in Dutchess County has absolutely gone through the roof, unfortunately. It's the highest rate in the last 25 years.
Is there a percentage?
It's up 53%.
Is that following national trends, or is it?
It is more than double the national trend. Wow. National trend is 25%,
which is still up.
But not nearly as much. In New York City, it's up 15%. In New York State, outside of New York City, it's up 15%. So Dutchess County, unfortunately, is leading this parade, and there's a variety of reasons. The economy really hit Dutchess hard. There is fewer beds and care for those in need of psychiatric assistance. Budget cuts. So many things are making life much more difficult that people, unfortunately, are choosing this end.
And so the next logical step here would be to say, okay, so what do we do about it? Is that being addressed?
It is being addressed. There is many things that are going on to sort of restore beds. You know, Dutchess County once had two major psychiatric institutions.
Sure.
We had the Hudson River Psychiatric Center. We had the Harlem Valley Psychiatric Center, both closed as the state changed its approach to mental health care. Long gone. Both sites are basically right now empty, though there is some efforts going on.
I have to say, in Albany, it was a common slight to say, oh, man, that guy belongs in Poughkeepsie.
Yeah. I remember hearing that.
Right.
Send him to Poughkeepsie, on Long Island.
Yeah.
But what's happening is the tight budgets, the inability for aftercare. There's just no real programs in place to provide a level of care after someone, by absolute chance, gets a bed. There's only a few dozen beds. There used to be 10,000 beds in Dutchess County.
That's fascinating.
And in 1963-64, President Kennedy came up with a plan for mental health centers around the country. And when we closed everything, that was the plan. You know, our own Dr. Alan Miller was in the forefront of it, and then we were going to build these freestanding mental health clinics. Guess what? Never happened. And the reason, well, a few of them happened. The hospitals gobbled them up. But what happened was mental patients come very low on our priority list. It's a terrible thing, because if you have somebody in your family or if you know somebody who needs this help, there's really no place to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we did a computer assisted analysis of 1.2 million death certificates for the cause of death. That's how we came upon these statistics. Mary Beth Pfeiffer, our investigative reporter, did it. And the causes of death are all over the board. It's drug overdoses. It's hangings. It's jumping off of bridges.
Yeah. Wow.
It's gunshots, suicide by gunshot. And the one trend that just keeps reappearing is that, the assistance, Joe, for those folks who need it, just not there the way it used to be, and more people need it now more than ever.
You know, two points. One being, I think we talked about it on the show, but the recent interview on 60 Minutes of the Virginia state legislator whose son went after his father and then took his own life. And you figure if a state legislator can't get his kid into a bed in an emergency situation, then, you know, who can?
Exactly.
The other issue, and I know this is part of the national trend, and I don't know if you about in Dutchess County, but also the elderly because of taking their own life at end of life and deciding to take matters in their own hands with disease and Alzheimer's and so forth.
Mm-hmm. That came up just a bit, I believe, in our numbers. It was more, you know, one of the families that consented to speak with us about their tragedy. It was a man who's 27.
Yeah,
27. He had Asperger's for years, sought assistance, just could not get the help that his family felt he needed and that he felt he needed.
And that's the whole issue.
Yeah,
you know, how do you go to the next point?
Yeah.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue and wrap up our conversation for this morning. We always welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be here next after the short break.
Support comes from McCabe & Mack, attorneys at law, Poughkeepsie, New York, providing legal services to business organizations, not-for-profits, municipalities, and financial institutions through the Hudson Valley. MCCM.com. Homebrew Emporium in North Greenbush, West Boylston, South Weymouth, and Cambridge, offering beer, wine, and cheese-making equipment and supplies, tea, herbs, and more. and First Sun Solar, Springfield, Massachusetts, specializing in the design and installation of solar PV electric systems, customizing and managing residential and commercial solar projects. FirstSunSolarCo.com.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We always welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Is our photo on Instagram yet, Alan?
I put it up, but I don't know where it went.
I assume
it's on Instagram.
Well, it's on Instagram.
Yeah.
And I pressed Facebook as a place to share it, but now you go at, what did you have to do to get that? I don't know.
Did you use your page or the station page?
I suspect I used my page.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right. That's all right. That's fine.
Because I don't know how to get to the station page.
Any tech-savvy listeners out there, please give Alan
check.
A call.
We'll check. We'll see.
Just
like the photo. Let's talk about Facebook for a second. Their deal, check this out. Facebook announced its largest acquisition ever, saying it would pay at least $16 billion for WhatsApp, a text messaging application with 450 million users around the world who pay little or no money for it. It is an eye-popping price that signals the lengths to which Facebook's co-founder and chief executive Mark Zuckerberg will go to protect his company's turf as the dominant social network on the web and is sure to fuel the debate on whether consumer internet companies are overvalued. And I guess it just gets down to the question of overvalue, but also, well, you know, if you can afford it.
So $20 billion, that's a lot of money.
$16 billion, but yes.
Yeah, but you have to add the extra four, which they're not talking about, I believe.
It could be up to 19 with bonuses.
Which is the private.
Well, they're paying $4 billion in cash and $12 billion worth of shares.
Well, I heard this morning another number, but
that's okay.
Why should we quibble? The real question is, what's Zuckerberg afraid of? In other words, along comes somebody else. They begin to eat his lunch, not in this country, but in other places. And he says, okay, in order to preserve the turf, I'm going to spend $20 billion or $19 billion. I want to meet you halfway. $19 billion of our money to do this, which for us is a $10 tip.
I'll tell you what he's afraid of. He's afraid of MySpace. Because
that's
MySpace,
what happened to them.
MySpace used to be Facebook. So what I think he's trying to do here is he wants market share. He bought Instagram for only $1 billion.
Right.
I guess
seems
he had
like
a coupon.
Nothing now. Seems like nothing
right.
now.
He had a coupon, only $1 billion
I
for
just
Instagram.
Used it.
I mean, Google bought YouTube 8 years ago for only about $1 billion when it was losing its shirt financially. Now it makes lots of money.
Yeah.
So I mean, and Facebook is skewing older now. You know, the young hep kids out there are on things other than Facebook, like WhatsApp and AskFM and things like that. So he's trying to get younger here.
But what we don't know,
he'll make money off
what we don't know about WhatsApp is that they don't take advertising, right?
Yet.
We know that.
Yet.
Yet. And you pay a dollar to become a member.
A buck a year, the first year is free.
And you to get to be a member.
Right.
And then what happens? I mean, how do you spend $19 billion on something and not be able to recoup
He'll put advertising on it. There's advertising on Facebook now. And on Instagram.
But what's to prevent the next joker from coming along and saying, I'm going to do what the other guys did?
Nothing. That's capitalism.
He'll buy them. He's got the money.
Yeah.
Well,
this IPO sort of helped out his pocket.
I think there's probably a limit on, even with a Zuckerberg, about how much you can invest, isn't there?
As long as you're raking it in.
Yeah.
He's raking it in. He is raking in. You know, what he's doing now is he's monetizing Facebook the way that MySpace never did.
Exactly.
I mean, MySpace was massive in its day for a few years there. And
it didn't do any of this stuff.
Fox bought it.
Yeah.
Your good friends at Fox and paid something like $800 million. And then basically they wrote it off as a distressed asset like 2 years later.
And not that this is a sort of a model, but it's very similar to what eBay did.
Yes.
And has been able to mm-hmm. survive as long as, because they had all of these different people come in and they say, okay, well, oh, we're you can sell whatever you want. And then somebody said, oh, we're gonna sell tickets. Oh, that's StubHub. Okay, we're going to buy you. And this is this monetary system that we have that you can pay for things. That's PayPal. Okay, well, we're going to buy you. Mm-hmm. And paid outrageous sums of money. But what they've been able to do, and now how old's eBay now? Almost 20 years old, right?
Yeah,
it's been around for a long time. So it's been able to stay relevant because of that. Mm-hmm. Because of that continued purchasing.
And they stayed relevant even in the face of Amazon.
Right.
Which is not easy to do.
Mm-hmm. I should note that on the Facebook page, I shared yours with with WAMC.
Oh, well, thank you.
It'll be up
so
there.
Now people can see.
But it's there. It is there.
They can see three of you, but not everybody.
No, not everybody. I will try to correct that momentarily.
And my apologies for scaring any viewers of that photo.
On the contrary.
You look great.
You look
very, very good. All right. Let us... I'll show it to you in just a sec. All right, other topics. Let us talk about solitary confinement.
Ooh.
New York State has agreed to sweeping reforms intended to curtail the widespread use of solitary confinement, including prohibiting its use in disciplining prisoners under 18. In doing so, New York becomes the largest prison system in the United States to prohibit the use of disciplinary confinement for minors, according to the New York Civil Liberties Union.
Well, I think they were under a lot of pressure. They had to do it. You know, there's some background here, which is that our prisons are filled with people of color in greater numbers than anybody else. So this week, we see the government entering into this consent not to do that with younger felons. But we also see other things happening in the prisons, one of which is this business of, offering college degrees to prisoners, which I am wildly in favor of. And I happen to think that the governor, who I don't always agree with, as you all know, deserves real credit for this. And goes before the Black and Latino caucus and makes this announcement that in several of our prisons, but not all of them, we're going to be doing this, because when they get out, the recidivism rate, as proven by Bard College and their prison program, is much less than if you don't do it. So to me, the question is, shouldn't you be thinking about how to rehabilitate, how to get people back into the mainstream, and how not to pay $80,000 or $100,000 a year for each prisoner who's coming back? Meantime, there are certain politicians. I said something I probably will live to regret this morning. I call them cheap tin horn politicians who say, okay, this isn't going to go over well. What'd you say?
Glad you didn't say that.
Oh, I'm glad I didn't. And yeah, sure. Here it is.
Thank you.
Well, so, I think the governor was courageous here. I think it was the right thing. I think he was courageous when he did the gun stuff. He knew he was going to get picked on by some of these people who'd say, your kids have to pay to go to college, but these guys in prison won't have to pay. You know, I just think it was the right thing to do.
I agree that Cuomo has done the right thing here. His stock has risen. When the two-step process to limit solitary confinement, which is incredibly inhumane, and to open up inmates to schooling opportunities. The press gets a role in this. There's been a lot of attention to solitary confinement in prisons nationwide. I'm familiar with a series from Illinois that won the Polk Award several years ago on the TAMS high security system, and it was overused. You'll see guards in New York are saying, oh, this is bad. You have to give us discretion to take care of bad guys. But what the newspaper reporters found was that it wasn't the worst of the worst going into solitary confinement. They were prisoners who probably were mentally ill to begin with. They're throwing feces at guards. And I realize that's horrible. I would not want to put up with that myself. But they ended up in solitary confinement for periods of up to 11 years. Mm. And there's no one watching over this. There's no one that monitors. We citizens do not care about our prisoners. We truly do lock them away.
And one of the aspects of this ruling is that the developmentally disabled will not be put in solitary confinement, correct, which New York State's record, and our newspaper has investigated this, is absolutely awful in how the developmentally disabled have been treated in the system.
Correct.
Now, I don't disagree necessarily on the college program in the prisons, but I will say this. It is a pretty established fact that the governor is considering a presidential run. I think there is certainly something to be said for the merits of this program. I think there is something also to be said about the merits of this being politically expedient for someone who may be seeking office in Washington.
Okay, I think there's a lot of people who don't like giving rights and benefits to prisoners. I don't see how that helps them all that much.
Well, there will be always people who say, let's examine the political motivation. I mean, after all, I was careful to say he made this announcement before the Black and Hispanic or Latino conference. I don't care. Right. Because in the end, was he right on gun control? Yes, he was. Was he right on this? Yes, I believe he is right. So Stu is right to say, okay, or is well within his rights to say, let's examine the motivation for this, the political motivation for this. But that's democracy. I mean, you know, that's why it happens. But yet, he did it. He's getting beaten up by people like Greg Ball and some of these other guys who are, you know, who are going after him for doing it, which is absurd in my idea, because he's right. He's just right to do it.
Governing is choosing, without a doubt.
When you think of what the next, so where do you think this goes? How far does it go now?
Well, apparently, and here I'm getting out of my area of knowledge and into what I'm projecting into this for a change. I truly think that he doesn't have a problem here. He can allow this to happen without legislative approval, so that you know, he's got the budget and he moves some stuff around, and he does it, and he makes arrangements with, and I think they're already putting out bids to various colleges and universities to do this. So unless the legislature comes back and says, you can't do this, he wins on this, he'll get it done, and I don't think the Assembly, the New York State Assembly, is about to say no to this. The Senate might say no.
New York suddenly has a lot of money to spend.
Well, you know,
where's all this money coming from? These rebates and these programs.
What's
and
the projected
everything?
Cost of this program? It's not that. It's not that extravagant.
I think it's $5,000 per inmate who's involved in the program. If I remember the story that I read on this, you know, that's a fair amount of money. On the other hand, what do you save if it's $80,000
exactly.
to incarcerate somebody a year, and you put them back in there, and it's the right thing to do? Right. That's cheap money.
That's right.
We are out of time. I want to thank everyone who wrote to us, who has been listening, and, of course, to our wonderful panel, Stu Shinsky, Rosemary Arameo, and Alan Chartok. There are photos. Your photo is up as well, Alan.
Fantastic. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, we all look good. Check it out, WAMC Facebook page. You can comment on the show as well there and share any of your thoughts. Roundtable at WAMC.org as well. Stu, thanks for making the trip. Always good to see you.
Always a pleasure.
See you soon. Thank you very much. Great. We'll be back with more Roundtable after this.